We know from a common sense standpoint, and we know from a biblical standpoint, that it is of the utmost importance for a man to find a good woman, a godly woman, a pure woman, to be his wife. Someone once said, well, if a man's going to have a good life, he needs to have a good wife, and that's certainly true. Proverbs 31, in discussing the virtuous woman, remember that the writer there says that she will do him good and not evil all the days of his life. Isn't that what we want? We look around in society today and we see some of the relationships around us where husbands and wives are at each other's throat from time to time, and there's always a problem. And as I said, we observe and we know from common sense how difficult it is for relationships to thrive and to flourish and to even survive in this world. And when we live in a world where those relationships exist without God and without His Word, they're even at a greater disadvantage. You know, the Bible says in Proverbs 19 and verse 13 that that living with a contentious woman is like a continual dropping. Can you imagine if you ever had a faucet that was leaking and it would drip and drip and drip, and you're lying there in bed at night and you hear that dripping and it just gets to where you can't stand it anymore. And so for a man, the writer is saying, for a woman that is a contentious woman, obviously not the godly woman, the woman that would be the virtuous woman and the woman that would be a blessing to her husband, one who is always wanting to fight and always looking for something to fight about, you know, that it would eventually wear him down and that it would be such a burden. Proverbs 14 and verse 1 says that every wise woman buildeth her house. Every wise woman buildeth her house. So when we look around today and we see people that are having difficulties in their marriage and in their home relationship, I wonder if the wife in that situation has thought about the fact that the more she does to tear down the relationship and the more she does to tear down her husband in front of the children, that the more harm she is doing to that relationship. And yet that is exactly what is happening. You've heard the story maybe about the preacher that was invited over to one of the members' houses for dinner. And when he arrived, the husband was not yet home from work. The wife was there, and the little boy and the little girl, the little boy and little girl kept running back and forth to Mama. Where's Daddy? When's Daddy going to be home? What time will Daddy be here? Can't wait to see Daddy. And they were jumping up on the couch, and their knees were on the seat of the couch. They were looking through the window, watching the driveway, looking out to the highway, waiting for Daddy to get home. And the preacher thought, wow, this guy must be, you know, full of muscles and, you know, the most handsome man that's ever lived. There must be something really great about him. So when the daddy got home, the daddy didn't really have any muscles, and he wasn't, you know, maybe he was average or a little below average. And the preacher's looking at him and thinking, why in the world do these children respond to their daddy the way that they do? And he sat and he listened, and he listened to the way that their mama talked to them about their daddy. Guess what? Daddy's home. He's been working hard all day. He does this because he loves us, and he's trying to provide for us. So you know, you be quiet. Go give him a big hug and a kiss around the neck. Hug around the neck and a kiss. Tell him that you love him, but then, you know, let him have some time to rest. And the preacher observed what was going on, and he thought, no wonder those children love their daddy. You know, because it's because of the way the mama has raised them. It's because of what they see in his good wife and the relationship that she has with her husband. When I was growing up, I grew up in a home where moms and dads, you know, just really didn't hug a whole lot in front of their children. They did a little bit. But I remember growing up, there weren't a whole lot of hugs, you know, from mom and dad. I mean, it was a different time, just a different way of living. If dad lives until October, he'll be 90 years old. You know what? When I left him Saturday, we hugged probably for the longest time that we ever had, and mama too. And they don't worry about anybody seeing them hug or giving each other a peck on the cheek anymore. You know, just don't worry about those kinds of things. But you go back and you think about what you learned and what you experienced. I remember my mother telling me, well, your dad has worked hard to gain a good reputation in this community. Now that you've got your driver's license, don't go out here and mess it up. And she was right. But I respected my daddy. I do respect my daddy. If my daddy asked me tonight, if I call them every night, because they are 200 miles away from here to the west, if I call my daddy tonight and he said, son, would you do so-and-so? Yes, sir, I'll be there. I do the same thing for my mama, but it's because of the relationship that they have. My wife and I have been married for 31 years, and you're not going to believe this, but we have never had a fight. Now, we've hurt each other's feelings at least three times that I can remember. I'll admit to that. When we first got married, we were new at this relationship thing. And I didn't know that women communicate differently than men. And I didn't know the technicalities of the fact that women think differently than men. You know, we tend to be more analytical. They tend to be a little bit more emotional. All right, and so that relationship is something that we have to work on. She called me at work one day. We'd been married about 2 months, and she said, hey, listen. She said, I've been to town three times already. I said, three times? Yes, I've been. Well, I had to go, and I went and got the roast. I'm planning a really nice meal for you tonight. We're going to have a quiet night, and it's going to be so special. And I went and got the roast, and then I forgot I didn't have the potatoes, so I went back and got the potatoes. And then I forgot I didn't have anything for dessert, so I went back and got something for dessert. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. That's 30 miles. Do you not know the price of gas? It's 75 cents a gallon. You can't be going back and forth like that. We can't afford that. Back then it was. I'm old, I admit it. When I came home, I could tell she had been crying. She didn't say very much on the telephone. But when I got home, I could tell that she had been crying. And I really couldn't get her to talk at first, and maybe that was a good thing, but she finally told me, that's how I grew up. If my daddy wanted a Diet Coke, he drove to town and got it. If he wanted a potato, he'd drive to town and get it. It didn't matter. That's just the way I grew up. I said, I'm sorry. I grew up differently. I said, I just think, what do I need from town? Everything, what is every store? It was a small town. What is every store that's in that town? What is everything that I can get? I want to go get it all and get it in one trip, and I can save all of that money on gas. And she said, I agree with that. I don't have any problem with that, but that wasn't the way I was brought up. And I felt like you were attacking me. I said, no. Okay. That was my first lesson. I came home a few nights later, and something had gone wrong at work. And I walked in the door, and she said, well, honey, what's wrong? I said, nothing. She said, well, I can tell something's wrong by the look on your face, by the way you're acting. Well, I don't want to talk about it. But I'm here. I'm your wife. You can talk to me about anything. But I know, but please, I don't want to talk about it right now. Well, she was wanting to approach it from an emotional standpoint. I'm wanting to approach it from an analytical standpoint. Ladies, I don't know if you figured this out or not, but when guys have something on their mind, they want to fix that one thing right then. They want to fix it themselves. They don't want a mother. They don't want anybody to tell them what to do. They want to be able to figure it out in their own mind, and they're focused on that one thing. Now, once they get it figured out, they'll be glad to tell you all about it. But they want to figure it out. We're just wired that way, at least most of us. So, I don't want to talk about it. Oh, please, no. This goes on for about 10 minutes. To keep from hurting her feelings again, I get up and walk out the back door, go through the pasture, go down to the pond, watch the tadpoles, you know. I finally figured out the solution to the problem, went back home and said, okay, what's for supper? You know, and she's like, well, that was half an hour ago. Okay. And she was angry. She was upset. She was emotionally upset because I'd walked out. I said, come here, let's talk. She said, why wouldn't you talk a while ago? I said, because I'm not that way. I said, men have their own cave. The Indians, the American Indians, the women used to tell their daughters before they married, a man sometimes must go into his cave, and there is a bear that guards the entrance of that cave. And don't go into that cave because you will be injured. And what they were trying to say is sometimes a man just needs to be alone. Okay? And when my wife learned that about me, and when I learned that sometimes I can tell by the look on her face she needs to talk, I need to sit down and I need to listen. God put two things on our head. They're called ears, and sometimes we need to listen. And our relationships work out so much better when we do. And so we learned, we worked through that. The other night, my son and his girlfriend were robbed in Atlanta. And we get the phone call about 12:18, and I hear my wife talking, oh no, what did they get? And I go into analytical mode. I knew that he had something in that truck that had a serial number on it. And I knew he needed to report it to the police real fast. And I believe providentially that day I had never seen a receipt that morning. I just go in the room and I was trying to clean up after him, saw a piece of paper on the floor, picked it up. It was the receipt with the serial number. And I'm like, wow, what a coincidence that is. And I ran to her and I said, let him have the serial number. How did you know? I don't know. I just, it happened. I wanted to call them back so badly, but I couldn't. I could have, but he's almost 23 years old. He's old enough to be on his own. They did the right things. It was two couples. Everything they did that night, they did the right thing. And I was just, it was Saturday night. You know, I was supposed to preach on Sunday morning. And I was sitting in that chair by that computer just staring at that screensaver, you know, white-knuckled, you know, and then thinking, you know, God's taking care of them this far. Everything's going to be okay. So he calls back about 2:30. Well, going to be a little bit later. What's wrong? Wreck on the interstate. Three motorcycles. Two people were killed. One is lying down on the pavement. The helicopters come in for the other one. They were down there for over 2.5 hours. They got home Sunday morning at 6:30. Well, I went to bed, you know. But the first thing I'm thinking is, okay, did you call the police? Did you give them the serial number? Were any windows broken out, you know, on your vehicle? Oh, that's okay. Okay, good. I'll go to bed now. You know, they'll be home later. And my wife's like, oh, no, my baby, you know. What's he going to do? What am I going to do, you know? But I told her that morning, I said, well, we're going to learn one thing for sure. They've been dating for a year. I said, here you go. Those two kids, I still call them kids. They are. They sit around and look at each other. They just look at each other and giggle. I mean, it just makes you sick, you know. Her older sister said, I just can't get over them. All they do is look at each other and giggle all day long. I said, well, that's love for you. It's not really love. It's infatuation. Love can come from it. But I told my wife, I said, they're going to know something about each other and about that relationship. So my son comes home and I asked him. I said, well, how did she react to, you know, to having her purse and all that stuff stolen? He said, well, I learned one thing. He said, I learned when she gets mad, never touch her or talk to her. I said, why is that? He said, she was ranting about, you know, that she had never had anything stolen from her before and that had some special things in it. And I reached over to touch her on the shoulder and say, I'm sorry. And she said, don't you touch me. Don't talk to me. And about an hour later, she apologized, and she said, when I get mad, that's the way I am. Well, they're still together, but they had to learn. Men and women certainly are different. And a lot of women don't understand the difference, you know, really about men, but I want to turn your attention to Titus chapter 2 and along these lines. In Titus chapter 2, beginning at verse 1, Paul writes, but speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, and charity and patience. Now, notice verses 3 and 4. That the aged women likewise, that they may be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, or wise, some translations there say, to love their husbands. I'll get back to the loving their children in a minute, but to love their husbands. Let me ask you a question. And feel free to answer or raise your hand if you'd like to be involved with this. But let me just ask you a question. Why would the older women need to teach the younger women to love their husbands? Anybody? That's exactly right. It doesn't come automatically. If they're still married, they've got experience. They know how it works. It doesn't come automatically. They've got to be taught or told, or they've got to learn through experience, and hopefully they will learn quickly through experience. But it's just like with my son and that young girl, you know, them, you know, making goo-goo eyes and giggling and all that stuff, you know, that's infatuation. But love can come from that. But biblical love, if you want to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and you might want to hold your place there, or we'll come back to Titus in a moment, but 1 Corinthians 13, when we read the description of love here, we understand this is the kind of love that women, that the older women would teach the younger women about, even about their husbands. Verse 4, charity or love suffers long and is kind. It envieth not, it vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things. Now, when you look at that description of love, and you look at a marriage relationship, and you look at things like it doesn't behave itself unseemly. Have you ever known of married people that would nitpick at each other? You know, I've seen that. I have actually seen mothers that would nitpick everything their husbands did, but the saddest part was they did it in front of the children. And what they ended up doing was building a wall between herself and the children and the husband. And I'm going to tell you something, it never ends good. That was bad grammar. It never ends well. It never ends well. And you probably know of situations like that yourself. But true love is not that way. So what are the older women going to teach the younger women? They're going to teach them to be patient. They're going to teach them that sometimes their husbands are going to get mad. They may say things that they don't mean. And they may say things or throw something before they go out that back door and before they go off into their cave to be alone and try to figure things out and come back. And they'll come back and usually apologize. They need to tell the younger women that the men that they dated, that was always sweet, that was opening the doors and holding doors open for them and bringing them flowers and taking them to fancy places to eat. That man, that young man is going to grow and he's going to stop doing some of those things. A lot of people still, you know, have date nights and they spend a lot of time on this. And the Bible does teach that a woman is to be involved in keeping romance in the marriage. All right? But the older women are going to have to teach the younger women that people change with time. Bodies change, attitudes change, emotions change. Before I ever perform a wedding, I sit down with a young couple and I come to 1 Corinthians 13. And I try to make a very practical application to marriage. And I ask them, do you understand the vows that you're going to take? That you're going to be with that person in sickness and in health, for rich or for poor. Everybody says that, but does anybody really mean it? Well, obviously a lot of us have. A lot of us did, right? But there are some people who don't really mean that. They're not going to invest in that relationship. It sounds good, but when you get right down to it, they may or may not stay. They may or may not be committed. Well, so we find then that the older women are going to have to teach the younger women how to love and to maintain love in that marriage, in that relationship. You might want to turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Notice in verse 21. Now, Paul has been talking about what all Christians do. And then in verse 21 he says, submitting yourselves to one another in the fear of God. That is something that all Christians do. But then in verse 22 he says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as unto the Lord. I heard someone say one time, I'm glad that this text says submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Because wives don't have to submit to anybody else's husbands, it's to their own. I don't know if that's really the intent there or not. But wives, submit unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. As unto the Lord. All right? But then verse 21 says, submitting yourselves. There is a way in which a husband submits to his wife as well. All right? So there is a submission by both of them. Someone says, well, a wife says, but how far do I take that? Suppose that my husband wants me to do something that is illegal or that I'm convinced is immoral, how far should I take that? Well, a Christian wife is never to go outside of the bounds of what God would have her to do for her husband. There are some wicked men in the world that would have their wives do some ungodly things. Her first allegiance is to God. Remember in Matthew chapter 22, but beginning at verse 36, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. Who do we love most of all? God. Who do we serve first and foremost? It's always God. In Acts chapter 5, Peter was told that he could not preach anymore in the name of Jesus in the temple. And remember what he said. He said there that we must obey God rather than men. Now, sure, a woman could say, well, I'm going to use that as an excuse and I'm not going to do anything my husband says. I'm just going to say that's not God's will. Well, be careful there. We have to be honest with that. But there are men that will request of their wives things that might be illegal or immoral. And women are not bound to do that which is sin in order to please their husbands. So there is that limitation there. But notice also what Paul has said there, wives, submit yourselves unto the husbands as unto the Lord. Would the Lord ever have you do anything that would be immoral, that would be wrong? He wouldn't. All right, but you submit yourselves to the Lord, will also submit yourselves to the husband. It's not a question of inferiority, superiority. It's not a question of slavery in the home or anything like that. It's not a question. If I said authority, let me back up. It's not a question of slavery. It's not a question of value. Who is of the most value? It is a question of authority. It's a question of roles. You know, Paul said that Christ is subject to the Father. Man is subject to Christ. Woman subject to the man. Does that mean that if Christ is subject to the Father, does that mean that Christ is of less value, that he's inferior in quality in any way to the Father? No, it doesn't. It's a reference to the role that he serves. Man is to serve Christ, and the woman is, in that sense, to serve her husband. Well, so these are some principles that we take into that relationship of marriage, that we together in a marriage relationship, that we are serving God. But that virtuous woman is that good woman that is going to make a home a place where a husband would want to be, where children would want to be. The woman that was contentious, that was always trying to nitpick and stir up trouble and find something wrong. Hey, I heard a woman one time talking about her husband, and over 30 minutes she never said one good thing about him. She had talked about his ignorance. She had talked about how that he couldn't do anything. Listen, ladies, again, I don't know if you realize this or not, but men have a fragile ego. Okay? Just a hint here. Don't tear him down all the time. Don't tear him down all the time, because he'll come home, but he won't be happy about it. Okay? And, you know, we put the shoe on the other foot. How would we feel if we were criticizing all the time? My wife said one day, she said, "Well, I know why you marry me is so that you could have somebody to blame." I said, "We were joking now." And I said, "Well, isn't that what all wives are for, is to have someone to blame?" And she said, "Well, I guess so. At least that's the way you're going to tell it." And so I did something wrong, and I said, "Well, there you go. You can blame me now." And she smiled, and she said, "I'm not that kind of person." So we've had fun with that, but it goes back to that attitude. And sometimes we have to be reminded what love is all about, all right? A wife is more than just a helpmeet. She is a mate to her husband. Genesis 2 and verse 24, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, or shall cleave unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh." Does the world believe that today? No. It's a man can take this wife and then that wife and then another wife and then another for any cause. She burns the biscuits. I don't like her. You know, I'm tired of her. I'll just go get somebody else. That seems to be our society. Let me ask you a question when you think about what was said there. "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall take it to him his wife." Ellen DeGeneres is a talk show TV host. She's a female. I think we all know who she is. And she's got a wife. Is that biblical? No, it's not possible. Even, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, shall cleave unto his wife, they two shall be one flesh." I always hate it when preachers say God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. But what are you going to do? You know, I just don't like that. But here, marriage is instituted. She is to be his mate. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 3 through 5, the Apostle Paul deals with a situation there that comes up in a lot of marriages. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 3, "Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife." Now focus on verse 5. "Defraud," that means do not refuse. "Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency." The King James says it literally means for your lack of self-control. What is he saying? He's saying here's a husband and a wife. They have physical needs, and those needs are to be fulfilled. There's not to be any blackmail in the bedroom. God never intended for that. It is a possibility that the husband and wife may say, "We're not going to have a physical relationship for a period of time for fasting and prayer," he says here. But there is a mutual decision that we're going to do this, and then there's going to be a time when this period of being separate is going to be over. All right? That's important. The first job I had was for a man. You know how there's always three sides to every story? His side, her side, and the real side. Man came to me and he said, "Well," he said, "I didn't have a scriptural divorce when I got divorced. I married this other woman," and he didn't. He was cheating on the woman he married. But he said, "Well, but it was not my fault. It was my first wife's fault. Because," she said, "if I don't get that mink coat that I want, you're going to have to sleep on the couch for a month." And if I don't get this that I want, you're going to have to sleep on the couch. If you don't, in other words, she was blackmailing him with her relationship to him. And that's wrong. The Bible very explicitly here says that that is wrong. And some husbands say, well, I don't know what happened. You know, we used to have a wonderful relationship. And now my wife just doesn't even want to get close or hug or anything anymore. Well, fella, did you go look in the mirror? You got green teeth and you got three-day-old body odor. I mean, were you that way when you dated? Did you ever brush your teeth when you were dating? Well, yeah. Did you take a bath when you were dating? Did you use deodorant when you were dating? Yeah. Try and see what happens. You know, there's two sides to that story, to that relationship. But there's got to be an effort. Familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, if you please. And sometimes people, you know, don't you know, keep up the relationship and work at it. In the Song of Solomon, we find that his fiancée, and even by the time that they were married, that she was a pure woman, and their marriage was based on fidelity and trust. In Song of Solomon 8, verses 8 and 10, we read here about this woman and about what her family was saying. They said, if she's a wall, we'll do one thing. If she's a door, we're gonna build a fence around her, literally. The Bible says she was a wall. She wasn't a door. She wasn't going out and sleeping with every man that came along. She was a wall. She was preserving herself and saving herself for marriage, as the Bible tells us that we're to do. Well, she realizes that people don't magically just fall in love, that it's something that has to be worked on. She worked on keeping and making sure that nothing interfered with her relationship with her husband, Solomon. In Song of Solomon 2 and verse 15, the King James says, "Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." The word in some translations, therefore, "take us the foxes" is capture the foxes. What she's saying is, don't let anything interfere with our romance. Don't let anything interfere with our relationship. Because sometimes it's not the big things that will destroy that relationship. Sometimes it's the little things. The little things that just keep on and keep on and keep on and that start adding up. And so this woman was very wise in realizing that she needed to make sure that no little thing was allowed to ever grow into a big thing, and no little thing was ever allowed to come between her and her husband. In Song of Solomon 7, verses 10 through 13, she, in this section, we find that she has been involved in trying to keep the romance alive in her wedding and planning a trip. She says, "I am my beloved's, and his desire is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourish, whether the tender grape appear and the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give thee my loves. The mandrakes give a smell, and at our gates are all manner of pleasant fruits, new and old, which I have laid up for thee, O my beloved." So here was a woman, by this time they were married, and she was working at keeping that relationship fresh. Like I said before, I know of people that have date nights. I know of people that say, you know, once a year, once every 2 or 3 months, we're going to go on a trip, just the two of us, and be alone, leave our children with someone else. Well, hey, if you can afford to do that, that's a great idea. But, you know, it can be something as simple as leaving the kids at grandmother and granddaddy's or at the sister or brother's house or whatever, just going somewhere. You know, you can just go to Walmart and walk around and talk to each other. Now, don't hug each other. People look at you funny. But, you know, sometimes just getting away where the two of you can talk. Go to Walmart in another town. That way nobody knows you and you don't care what they think. But you go to a movie if you can find one worthy of your time. But just go somewhere. Go to the lake. Now, the guy's probably going to want to fish. You know, you can't let him do that. But go somewhere where the two of you can be alone. We find this being done. This is a biblical principle. In 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 3, "But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God." As I said before, it's not a matter of superiority or inferiority. It's a matter of role and relationship. And though the husband is in a position of authority, if, according to Ephesians 5:21, he and the wife are going to submit to each other still, does it allow a man to be a dictator and lord over his wife or a tyrant? No. In Ephesians 5 and verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." So we've got a husband and a wife in the home. She loves her husband. She loves God more. And she respects God's will for the home and His design for the family. After all, if God created us, He should know the best way for it to work. So she respects this and she says, okay, I'm going to submit myself to His authority. He comes home and she is the light of his life, makes his life such a wonderful existence. And he comes home and he's willing to die for her, to give her anything she wants that he can provide, to do anything that he can for her to make her happy. And she is there. So he comes in and he says, I'm wondering, I think we need to make this change. We need to buy this for the house or whatever. And she says, well, you know, that's okay, but this over here would be better, and I think we need it more. If he's a wise man, what's he going to say? You know what? You're right. You're exactly right. And I didn't mean it for that reason necessarily. Yeah, if he's a wise man, he'll agree to anything. No, but if he loves his wife, he's going to respect her opinion. When I go to buy something, I always ask my wife, because if it doesn't work out, then I can blame her. And I'm just kidding. But I always ask her because she gives me valuable input. She gives me valuable input. And I have started to do something before, and I said, well, what do you think about this? And she said, I'm afraid if you do that, this is going to be an unintended consequence. This might happen. Oh, I never thought about that. Thank you. Okay, then that's what we'll do. There have been some times where she said, I don't have a clue. You do what you want to do. Okay, I'll do it. All right? So the wife is a helpmeet. She is also a mate. But she, if the husband is fulfilling his role, I know you've already studied that, there's some overlap, but I don't want to get into that. But if the husband treats his wife, loves his wife the way Christ loved the church, it would be easy for the wife to love her husband and to submit to his authority, and as he submits also to her will and to her needs. And so there is a partnership here. There is a working together. All right? She obviously is a mother. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 14, I will therefore that younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the act of to the adversary to speak reproachfully. It's important for a woman to teach her children, to cause them to grow intellectually. But it's more importantly than intellectual and physical and social growth for them to grow spiritually. You know, you can buy bread, but you can't buy integrity. You can buy bread with money, but you cannot buy heaven. And so a mother needs to understand the great responsibility that is placed before her and making sure that she keeps that relationship with that child. It's a parent-child relationship, and that she makes sure that she puts teaching that child one of her priorities. In Proverbs 29 and verse 15, the proverb writer says, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but the child left to himself will bring his mother to shame, or shame to his mother. She is also a great manager. We find that back in Proverbs 31. And all of these things, we find in verse 13 that she was a willful worker. She did everything in an orderly manner, verse 15. She wasn't afraid to work, verse 27. She took great pride in her work, verses 18 and 25. I want to ask you a question. Did her family suffer because of what she did? I know we don't have time to read it. But remember that her children rise up and call her blessed. She gets up before daylight. She goes and she gets the wood. She lights the fire. She gets the food. She cooks the meals. She gives it to her food to the children. She gives it to her maidens. She takes care of her husband. His husband trusts in her. Has no fear of spoil. Okay, children rise up and call her blessed. Has she neglected her house? Well, I don't think so at all. We think sometimes that perhaps, well, in Titus 2 and verse 5, a woman is told to be discreet, chaste, and a keeper at home. Does that mean that a woman cannot work outside the home? See, I waited to the last minute to ask that question because I know you don't have too much time to talk about it. Does that mean that a woman cannot work outside the home? If it does, then we've got a problem with the virtuous woman and with Priscilla and with Lydia, women who worked outside the home. What is the point of being a keeper at home? Let me tell you something. If a house is in such disarray that the husband comes home from work and he is humiliated to have other people come in because there's dishes stacked to the ceiling, I'm just throwing things out there. Dishes are stacked to the ceiling. Clothes are all over the floor. Food is in the carpet. All these kind of things. The children are running wild. Nobody knows what they're doing and cares. Mama just says, go outside and slams the door. And I don't care what you do. Is she being a keeper at home? The word keeper means to be to watch. It means that her family comes first. I believe that if that passage meant that a woman could not work outside the home, that we would have a serious conflict with Proverbs 31 and with a virtuous woman, and as I said before, with Priscilla and with Lydia, and maybe with others. But what does a woman have to understand about the family? When she makes that commitment to become a wife and a mother, who comes first? Her family. Her family comes first. My wife works outside the home, and I'm not taking this interpretation because she does, and I'm trying to justify anything. She did not work outside the home until our children were in school. And then she took a job where she only worked while our children were in school, and then she was at home with him. Not everybody is blessed with that opportunity. Sometimes women have to work to make sure there's food on the table. All right? But when my wife comes home now, we might not eat supper until 8 o'clock. But she comes in and the pans start rattling. She gets ready to cook. Sometimes I say, oh, just stop by Taco Bell and bring something home. You know, and because I know you're tired. I'll run the dishwasher. I'll wash the clothes. And I take care of my son while she's not there. She takes care of him while I'm not there. I know he's almost 23, but we still have to take care of him. Kids these days. But she is a manager. But she knows. And she will tell you that her number one priority is that home and that relationship. And if my son and I ever have words, she will come and she'll say, no, no, no. Life is too short. We may not have tomorrow. And we're not going to be fighting with each other. We're going to make sure that our home is a place of peace and a place of love and a place of security and a place of safety. And I'm going to tell you something. My son has come back more than once, and I have too, after the temper was gone, and said thank you to a good woman who put God first and her family second, but who made sure that that relationship was going to last until eternity. Any comments? I believe that was our time. Any questions or comments or criticisms? Well, thank you. All right. Thank you very much for your kind attention.